the Nightlife Podcast.
Throughout human history, when it comes to real estate, land claims and disputes have led to countless wars. We see it continuing. On a large scale, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is the most recent example. The Russians claiming some sort of historic right to Ukraine territory as a rationale. But other small and unappealing pieces of land are also the focus of disputes. China occupying and building on three tiny but strategically placed islands in the South China Sea as their territory, for instance. Well, another small island, Hans Island, located in the Arctic, has also been the focus of a territorial dispute for many years between two democratic nations, Canada and Denmark. But rather than resorting to military action, the two nations this week reached a very civilized agreement as to territorial rights, ending a good-natured dispute dubbed the Whiskey War. Well, to tell us more, we're joined now by Ian Austin, a journalist who lives in Ottawa and who's reported for the New York Times about Canada for more than a decade. Ian, hello and welcome to Nightlife.
Good morning. Good evening. I'm sorry.
Yes. No, good evening. Morning. First up, Ian, can you describe Hans Island to us? Where is it? How big is it? And what's on it?
Perhaps not in the order you asked. It's well above the Arctic Circle. It's in between a narrow passage about 40 kilometers wide that separates the Nunavut territory of Canada from Greenland. And what's on it? Absolutely nothing. It's a barren lump of rock. In fact, the only way you can really get on it is to go by snow machine in the winter or get dropped on it by helicopter. You can't even land a boat on it.
Okay, and so historically, who has laid claim to it then?
Well, I think historically it was really the possession of the Inuit who live on either side of the international boundary that didn't exist for a long time. 49 years ago, Canada and Denmark, which of course controls Greenland, had a series of discussions to set a boundary between Greenland and eastern Canada, and it failed. And they had a proposed one, but they just threw their hands up on Hans Island. So for five decades afterwards, both countries tried to claim it.
Okay. And when did Denmark and Canada first face off then over control of it?
So it was 49 years ago they gave up. But then things took an interesting twist. Every now and then, the issue of Canada's sovereignty over its Arctic region becomes an issue. And in 1983, some Canadian troops landed on the island, planted a Canadian flag, and left behind a bottle of Canadian Club whiskey. And that's what kind of triggered this being a little bit of a story for decades to come. The Danes would, of course, found out about this, would have nothing of it, sent their own troops, took away the Canadian Club whiskey and the Canadian flag, replaced them with their own flag and a bottle of schnapps. And this kind of sort of crazy tit-for-tat went on for almost 50 years. It seems the foreign ministers of both countries started a tradition of mailing back that country's flag after it had been retrieved.
Right, okay. And as often is the case when a territory is disputed, there are some resources involved in it. Is there a resource stash here that is also exploitable and part of this dispute?
Well, yes. I mean, that actually is the big issue here, not the lump of rock. It's that boundary and the offshore mineral and energy rights. And there is a large amount potentially of oil and gas underneath the strait that Hans Island sits in. As someone put it to me, if we ever start accessing it, we'll have lost the war against climate change. It's very, very deep. And of course, in the summer, that area is filled with icebergs, which would demolish any drilling rig.
Right. Okay. Now, you mentioned the whiskey war, how that term came about. And I understand that some of the alcohol that's been on the museum on the island is now part of a museum collection even.
Ah, well, no, this was this week the two foreign ministers met in Ottawa and signed a definitive agreement establishing, I mean, it seems very strange speaking as a Canadian, that Canada now has a land border with Europe, or a water border with Europe.
Yeah.
And for the last time, they exchanged bottles of schnapps and whiskey, both of which went to the Museum of History here in Ottawa. So unfortunately, they didn't break them open and have a toast.
Oh, I see. All right. So let's go back to those ministers then. So what happened in this past week? How was that issue of ownership resolved?
Well, the since Justin Trudeau became Prime Minister and with his Liberal government in 2015, this was, I wouldn't say it's a priority, but they finally wanted to resolve this thing, and talks sputtered and started and restarted. By coincidence, the negotiations resumed in earnest around January, so shortly before Russia invaded Ukraine. And I mean, they were pretty open about the fact that that things were expedited because of that. They wanted to show the world that there was a way to settle territorial disputes that did not involve bloodshed and so on.
Mm. And as you said, because of what's going on in Ukraine, there was probably more of a commitment to highlight that as well.
Oh, completely, yes. I mean, both ministers explicitly mentioned which is happening in Ukraine, Russia's actions there, and contrasted their peaceful resolution of this somewhat silly dispute.
Mm. And you mentioned, Ian, that Canada now weirdly has a European border, and the agreement has meant that Canada and Denmark will have established the world's longest maritime border as well. Now, how's that so?
Well, it runs from the North Pole all the way down to the Labrador Sea, which is abuts the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, where people actually live. I mean, along most of this border, there's very, very few people. They're mostly the Inuit, the indigenous people, and they were actively involved on this. Part of the agreement guarantees that they'll have access to the whole island, because occasionally an Inuit hunter or fisherman in the winter will end up on the island.
Yeah. And so will both flags fly there now on the island?
I asked them about that, and everyone was very coy. No one gave me a straight answer about whether there'll be a flag ceremony. I mean, I don't think it is quite godforsaken up there. I don't think a flag lasts very long. I noticed some of them, in fact, were painted steel.
Ah, right. Okay. And I'm assuming then whiskey and schnapps, will there still be those exchanges happening?
No. And sadly, that's come to an end. Those two bottles that are off to the museum,
they're the last ones?
The last of a series, yes.
Oh, there you go. Well, thank you, Ian. Thanks for filling us in on this fascinating sort of resolution that's happened quietly, but nonetheless significant, I think.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's a good precedent for the world. And also, there is a kind of longer term precedent, because there's a lot of disputation around borders in the Arctic and the ownership of resources up there. So this is an example to other Arctic nations.
Yeah, terrific. All right. Thanks, Ian. Thanks for joining us on Nightlife tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ian Austin, he's a journalist who lives in Ottawa and has reported for the New York Times about Canada for more than a decade, filling us in on the resolution of this dispute of the control of the island of Hans that Denmark and Canada have finally settled.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.